Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alrighty, rocking and rolling, hour number two from the downtown Phoenix Convention Center. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. You see this guy all throughout the NCAA tournament. Joining us live on set right now is the always entertaining Clark Kellogg. Clark, great to see you. Thanks so much.
Hey, good to be seen, Zach, and great to see you and to be with you. This is a highlight weekend for those who love college hoops.
By the way, my favorite line of yours during the tourney.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know, maybe Charles Barkley's rubbing off on you and gets you a little polarizing. I wasn't expecting this from Clark Kellogg, but you're like, the score is tight. It's kind of like going into that that airplane bathroom.
Yeah.
I understood what you were saying.
Yeah,
people's mind,
yeah.
They went into a dirty,
they did.
Type of place, but I get it being a tall, big
yes,
fella.
You would, Zach.
Going
you know
into
exactly
one
what
of those,
I'm talking
going
about.
Into those airplane bathrooms
hey,
ain't easy.
Yes, it's not, man. But I think everybody can relate to it on some level in terms of the tightness and cramped quarters, and that's all I was trying to illustrate. Nothing more. And if it helps people paint a picture of what tightness looks like, then I'm happy that it turned out the way it did. Yeah.
What did you make of the reaction from that line? Because
oh, it was man. Great. I mean, Ernie obviously is excellent as a deadpan guy, and he didn't want to see what I was trying to.
Thanks for the imagery.
Yes, exactly. But it was great. I had some other folks that are in our studio that are working behind the scenes, and they loved it. They all chuckled and laughed, and I mean, it was fine. Yeah, it was good. No, it was fine. Sometimes it's nice to surprise folks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, I definitely did. I was on my couch. I was like, okay, I get it, but I wasn't expecting that from Clark.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah.
Charles was
going to say
that.
I slide him in there every now and then. Yeah, I'm a little sillier than some people think I am.
So here's the big question of this tourney. How does someone give UConn a game? Alabama, we know they could score.
Yeah.
Their defense has been improving throughout this tourney. They've been making stops. Where's the confidence that Alabama gives them a game tomorrow evening?
Yeah, it's moderate. Actually, a little more than moderate. Because of their ability to shoot the three and because of the points you just made, Zach, they have been good enough defensively in spots in every tournament game, more so than they were during the regular season. So that's what happens sometimes. You see teams show you improvement in areas that you wondered if they would make improvement in. So defensively, they've been better. And I think they get Reitzel back is what it sounds like. And that helps. It adds another player in their rotation, another shot maker, playmaker. And the three-point shot is an X factor, although UConn has been extremely stingy defensively, particularly behind the arc. So and then they also, I mean, I think their scoring ability, if they can be efficient, that gives them a chance to maybe apply some long-term game pressure, which hasn't been part of UConn's experience really since last tournament.
And you know what scares me with UConn? We all know they're great. Yeah. I think they're better this year than they were last year. They haven't even been playing that great in this tournament. They're still kicking everyone's
ass.
That's a great point.
I was just talking to somebody else, and they talked about no adversity faced by UConn, which is an interesting way to look at it. And they haven't really faced any. But to your point, they haven't shot the three that well, but they've done just about everything else at a pretty high level.
Clark Kellogg here with us. Let me get to the other side of it. NC State, because they play in the ACC – people will be like, oh, they're not a Cinderella. But they have all the looks of that have been Cinderella
conference
team, right?
Affiliation doesn't determine whether you're a Cinderella. It's what you've done beyond what was expected of you that determines Cinderella. And that can happen whether you're in a power conference or not. So clearly, a team that was nowhere on the radar for being part of the Field of 68 after losing four games in a row and now wins nine games in a row. That's Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, coach is about to get fired. They're 17-14.
Come
now they're
on,
in the Final Four.
Come on, man.
I know we all like to pretend we're experts this time of the year.
Yes.
Outside of maybe Jim Boeheim, I don't think anyone was saying NC State was going
no
to be
doubt,
in this spot.
No doubt. I agree 100%. We're only experts at knowing how much of an expert we aren't.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
I'm only an expert at getting things wrong.
We're all good at that.
Just take a look at the bracket. The bracket has been terrible this year. I want to ask you, continuing off NC State, because I made this point to a lot of people. the thing that has impressed me the most, obviously the story, but their legs just have not given out.
Yeah.
I would have thought by now, with how many games they've had to play and how quick it is moving from game to game, survive in advance, they look like the most well-conditioned team maybe in the country that I've seen.
That's a great point, but I think most teams can manage workload through practice or less practice so that you're at your best.
Not like when you were playing.
For the games. Yeah, it's changed. It's changed.
Run you into the ground in practice.
Yeah, but now there's much more understanding of what's required to be sharp, and rest is a big part of it. The mental focus is more of what you're doing at this point in time. The late Bobby Knight used to talk about it all the time in terms of being mindful of keeping his team's legs fresh as the season went on, and that meant reduction in practice time, more treatment and taking care of your body, and maybe a little more mental rehearsal. And so I'm sure that's part of what the equation is. And there's a level of excitement that comes from being able to play in the games, and that adrenaline also can carry you too, as long as you're body is in pretty good shape.
If you can't say Clark Kellogg, pray or get him into foul trouble. What's the best game plan going up against Zach Edey?
You've got to be efficient offensively, and then you've got to be disruptive defensively on the perimeter. I mean, you've got to be able to apply pressure on the ball, both when guys are dribbling and also when the ball goes in to Zach, trying to keep – you've got to be active with your feet and hands and disciplined in that without fouling. I mean, those are the things that I think give you a chance. Ohio State beat Purdue late in the season, and that was one of the best defensive efforts the Buckeyes had put together, not because they physically wore Zach down, but they were active. Everybody was active, engaged, ball deflecting passes, getting hands on balls, those kinds of things. Loose balls, you've got to get more of those than Purdue does. That kind of stuff is where you can make up for a huge disadvantage in size. So that, to me, activity and disruption with discipline defensively. And then you've got to be efficient on offense. You can't afford offensive droughts. You've got to be consistently scoring the ball, taking good shots and making a good percentage of them, to me, is part of the recipe.
Do you want to see Clark Kellogg, the tourney, expand from 68 teams?
I've warmed to it because it's more a function now of expanding in relationship to how many more Division I teams there are. Every other championship or postseason play of the NCAA usually has 20 to 25% of the eligible Division I teams that can qualify. In basketball, before the 2011 expansion, it was like at 19%. We went to 68. That got it to 21 or 22%. And this next move, if it's 4 or 8, based on the number of the additional number of Division I teams, would keep us in that space of 22, 23% of your teams. I think that's reasonable and makes sense and is fair.
You don't think it would water down the product?
No, I don't. I don't because, again, you're adding more teams, so there would be a few more spots. And I think that would be fine. I was adamantly opposed until just recently. And then you start to think about it from a rational standpoint, and that makes more sense to me, as opposed to just trying to create more spots. There's a reason behind expanding, if in fact it happens.
So I think you're in an interesting spot, because whenever I ask someone about name, image, and likeness in the transfer portal that are not still playing, if you criticize it at all, it's like, oh, it's the old head, doesn't understand the times. And I get you understand the times now. You're on TV and you're on the radio all the time talking about college basketball. But where do you think we are at, and where do you think we need to get to when it comes to name, image, and likeness, and also the transfer?
I love where we are in terms of what name, image, and likeness creates as an opportunity, not only economically but educationally for student-athletes. I was never under the impression, I was never in agreement with, you would be penalized by earning a college athletic scholarship to not be able to use your name, image, likeness. It clearly is off the rails. The transfer portal, I appreciate that. Unlimited transfers is too far. We need one transfer. You can play without penalty of sitting out. After that, we've got to tighten that. And then we need regulation, and we also need more transparency in the NIL space. And that may be a combination of federal legislation and the NCAA or some form of an overseeing body creating the lanes that NIL is going to run in. And I think institutions should have their hands on it more, because I think you could actually control the economic and the educational components of NIL better if it was in-house. If it was in-house, I think the institutions would have the latitude, but also the parameters and the transparency components needed so that it could be monitored and regulated, but they have freedom to operate within a space based on the institution's particular posture around NIL and what they can fund. And so I'm hopeful we get there, because I think it's here, it's not going away, and it's an opportunity to build something that is sustainable, and we can still keep education in its totality in the equation, as opposed to it being now a recruiting inducement. It was never meant to be that. NIL was meant to be something that student athletes at an institution could capitalize on when they were there in that city, in that area. It wasn't to be, what's your package in NIL? That's why I'm going to come to your school. That was never meant to be, and it's gotten way out of bounds in that regard. But I am still hopeful we can recalibrate it at some point.
He is Clark Kellogg. Clark, always enjoy watching you on TV this time of the year and listening to you on the radio as well. We appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Zach. Great to be with you. Keep up the good work, man.
You got it. Thanks so much. He is Clark Kellogg. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We're sponsored by Kohl's. It's a new season at Kohl's. Find fresh everyday styles for you and your home at great prices. Shop Kohl's and Kohl's.com. Today, we are going to take a break here right now on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back. We'll chat it up with BC coach Earl Grant on the other side. Back from Phoenix in a few moments.
Hey, everyone. This is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back inside the Phoenix Convention Center. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We're sponsored today by Verizon, the network you can rely on for your phone and your home internet. Find the plan that's right for you at Verizon.com. And now joining us live on the show is the men's head basketball coach at Boston College, BC. And that, of course, is Earl Grant, kind enough to join us right now. Coach, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you stopping on by today. I know it's been a busy time of the year with the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness, all that stuff. It's a crazy landscape that we're now in college basketball, but also a good one. Since you are a coach in the ACC, I sit here, I see NC State, and I'm like, how the heck did this thing happen? I know they were 17-14, and then boom, 5 wins in 5 days, and then they're off to the NCAA tournament. Now here they are at the Final Four. You played them a few times this year and kept it close. Just what kind of stands out to you with this basketball team at NC State?
First thing stand out is Kevin Keats. You know, got a lot of respect for him. You know, this is my 10th year as a head coach, his 11th. In all of our years in coaching, we've been in the CAA or the ACC. So I've seen his teams, we played against them for a lot of years. So that's the first thing to stand out. His teams win. They believe, can't count them out. But other than that, you know, you want to know about their run late. I think it's experience. You know, guys that are all in their graduate or fifth year of college basketball or fourth year. If you look at their roster, everybody they play is either fifth or fourth year players. But they got a great combination of inside, outside, you know, with DJ Burns in the middle. He's just so hard to deal with underneath the basket. Whether you play him one-on-one, if you play him one-on-one, he can score. If you try to double him, he can really pass. And then on the perimeter, those guards really shoot the ball well from the perimeter. Morsell and Horn and even, you know, the transfer they had who made the shot to get him past Virginia.
Oh, yeah, the bank three.
And, you know, so very veteran team and very good inside-outside punch.
So when I look at DJ Burns, I kind of feel as if the conversation gets a little disrespectful about him, because people already just bypassed the potential NBA career. And a lot of us in the football world, like Jim Nagy, the director of the Senior Bowl, he goes, when I watch him, I think this guy could play in the NFL. What do you think his basketball future is, having to coach up against him a few times?
Well, I think he can play in the NFL too. But I also think he can play in the NBA. You know, with the body of work that he's put together within the last 3 weeks to a month, you have to give him a nod or consider him for at least second round, because he is a legitimate inside threat and he is an unbelievable passer. So you can play him as a point center. And if you think about the Joker with the Denver Nuggets, I've never seen him dunk a ball, you know, but I see him really pass it and I see him really draw a lot of tension in double teams. So, you know, I think he definitely has a chance to play in the NBA.
I think it's the toughest part with Nikola Jokic, and right, even DJ got elated when he was drawing comparisons to Nikola Jokic, who wouldn't. But for the Joker, it's like, okay, if you let him go get his, he'll go drop 45 on you and you'll be screwed. But then if you try to take away his scoring, it's almost like a player like Nikola Jokic enjoys dishing off 12 or 13 assists. You see that. You do see that with DJ as well. It's just, I don't even know how you try to contain him.
Well, I think the first thing he does when he catches the ball, he's actually looking to pass. I think he enjoy passing it. I think he enjoy helping his teammates find easy shots, whether it be on cuts or spot up threes. So that's what he want to do first. And he's very patient. So he watches the first 2 minutes and see how he's trying to identify how you're going to guard him. And then he gets to his solution. So for him, his first thought is to catch it, look to pass it. And then he get really excited when his teammates make a couple threes, because he's waiting to say, you know what, at some point they're going to take the double off, and then now they can't guard me. So I think you got to pick your poison, because whether you play him one-on-one or double him, he can really impact the game.
I know that you made the NCAA tournament when you were the coach at Charleston. We know that you've now have had some years at BC. Where do you kind of think your program is moving towards in these new kind of era of college basketball with the transfer portal, name, image, and likeness? And you know how quickly things could change with just looking at NC State this year. Heck, I don't even want to say 3 months ago. A month ago, no one thought this was possible. So I'm sure the run is inspiring, but where do you think your program is moving towards?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the first thing I'm proud of is that we've been able to really move the program back to winning. You know, over the last 3 years, we've been able to, you know, just continue to get more wins and play the game the right way. You know, and then just getting to the postseason. So that was a big deal for us. You know, but now in this situation, I think we got to really pay attention to what has taken place in college basketball. We are in free agency right now, so we can't get too emotional if we lose a guy, and we got to always be trying to figure out how do we replace him with the right guys. And that's just where we are. Obviously, NC State made the right decisions on the players they brought in. Those guys are performing, and you can actually realize, you can pay attention to their run here late. You can tell they're enjoying each other. Guys are buying into their role. They got good chemistry. He's got some character in that program. And so I think selecting the right players out of the portal is very important. And if you do it, you actually can make your team better.
And I love the way that you said it. And, right, you are a younger coach when you're in your 70s right now. I understand why coaches don't want to adapt, because they're used to just doing things a certain way. But in order to have success in this new era, you have no choice but to adapt. Putting, you know, like me in your shoes, what do you want the fan, what do you want the consumer of basketball to understand about some of the challenges of the transfer portal that it does create now for a coach moving forward?
You know, I think what it does, you know, is it really affects the coaches, but it also affects the young, the players. Because, you know, none of us are talking about getting a college degree. We used to talk about how important education was and getting a degree and relationships, you know, but now it's like, okay, which coach you going to invite to the wedding? You know, what's the relationship?
Yeah, right? I have to find three coaches to the wedding now.
Yeah, so, and at least two of them may not want to come.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, some of those things as it pertains to the relationships, how important a relationship is, how important getting a college education is. The only thing that is discouraging about what I've seen is those things aren't being talked about anymore. The only thing that's being talked about is money. And so even your career, what's the trajectory of your career? Are you doing well? Are you having success? Okay, then why are you leaving? So, you know, so that's the part that's a little bit discouraging, and I hope that these kids can make the right decisions. But I think for me and my staff, you know, as you lose a guy, you're already getting calls about another guy you can bring into your program. The key is finding the right player because it's speed dating. You don't have a lot of time to build a relationship. So you have to make decisions a little quicker than maybe you're comfortable making them.
He is Earl Grant, the coach at BC. I'm also curious about this. So, you know, my uncle's from Framingham, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So I'm familiar, with the Boston area. When you're a coach, right, in the Boston area, it's such a big pro sports town with the Celtics and the Patriots and the Red Sox and the Bruins. How do you kind of differentiate yourself a little bit and your team so you get that hardcore passionate fan base to really invest with BC?
Well, the first thing about it is...
You got to win.
The first thing about it is just enjoying those teams you just mentioned. You know, some cities you're in, you don't have the opportunity to enjoy those teams and have relationships with those teams, the coaches and some of the front office people. So that's been really amazing to be able to enjoy those relationships that you can build with those teams and you can go watch those games. That's unique. But, you know, Boston is a place for a fighter and Boston is a place for a winner. So I think that the people in the community, they know what winning looks like. But they also know what grittiness and fight look like. And so I think if you show up and you play with a great level of grit, they really appreciate that. And that's something that I've seen over the last 3 years, us building a program, the people embracing how hard our guys play. Because it is a fighter's place, and it's a place for a person that's got some grit to them.
You know, I hate to call Charleston a stepping stone job, but when you go to a school like Charleston, which has tremendous resources, a beautiful campus, mm-hmm. You know, you do well there, you get elevated to a bigger job like you've seen, so you know how this works. What do you take away from your time at Charleston as now we've seen Pat Kelsey get the Louisville job and now Chris Mack getting back into it going to Charleston?
Yeah, it's a great place. You know, I grew up in the city, again, so I was so fortunate to have the opportunity to be the coach, you know, and build that program and leave a legacy. And I think if you go coach there, you don't want to leave. You really don't want to leave, but I think what happens is, if you win and you continue to win, you get to a point where College of Charleston can't continue to make the package right for you. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, typically when you win in this profession and you win at a high level, there's going to be other opportunities to go and leave. And you're not going to leave for a lateral job. So you got to leave for a bigger job. And then some of these jobs that you have a chance to go to, there's great opportunity. And I think that's just, you know, you kind of outgrow the situation and you have to leave and you don't want to leave. And I'm sure people can do like Mark Few and stay for 20 years. But, you know, if I look at my situation, you know, I thought Boston College in the ACC, I wanted to coach in the ACC and I wanted to have make an impact on a program that had great history. You know, you saw what Al Skinner did and Jim O'Brien and then try to restore it. I think with Pat Kelsey, same thing. He had to leave. He couldn't turn down the opportunity as much as he loved staying in Charleston.
Yeah. Well, Coach, continued success. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
He is Earl Grant, the coach at BC. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. I know we got to stick around here for a few more minutes before we do get to the update. But on the other side, we will have Phil Martelli joining us live on the set. Appreciate Coach Earl Grant obviously joining us. Just real quickly, I want to get to this story, and I know we're moving and grooving here in a thousand different directions, and we got a bunch of different guests on all throughout the day, and appreciate Earl Grant joining us. And once again, Phil Martelli is going to join us on the other side. But Samter, let me pop up your mic here for just a second because I can't find the story. But if I'm understanding it correctly, there's a report out there today that there are some in the Cowboys organization that are getting a little concerned about Micah Parsons. What are the specifics there from the reporting?
So this came out of our sister station out there in Dallas, 105.3 The Fan, and the report is that there's just enough people within the inside of the Cowboys organization that are just getting tired of Micah Parsons' shtick. I said shtick. That's mm-hmm. a Yiddish word.
Not antics?
Yes.
For his people antics. That don't speak Yiddish.
Yes. As opposed to a word that it may have sounded like. And that, you know, just between all the things that he does on his podcast and the way he reacts. So the quote is this: I've heard from way too many people that if Micah Parsons was out of there, there would be a decent amount of people inside the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco smiling or breathing a sigh of relief.
And who had that at 105? Do we know who had that at 105 The Fan?
Let me see.
It's fine if we don't have the name, but it's just from 105.3 Fan. So it's credible if it's from the fan.
Yes.
But you know what? that seems like hogwash to me. That seems like nonsense. That dude, yeah, sure. He could run his mouth, there's no doubt about it. But he is still a phenomenal football player. He's not Myles Garrett. He is not TJ Watt. He is not Max Crosby. But that dude is a phenomenal football player. And the Cowboys, I know they're a big brand, and I know they're, right, Jerry's World and the star of the Cowboys and all that, but they are not in a position where you could have people in that organization that I think that – I don't think that passes the smell test in terms of what there'd be people that'd be happy if they found a way for him to get out of the organization. I don't buy that.
So it comes from Sean Sharif. He's the co-host of Sean and RJ. He's the big
I know him well.
Yeah.
I'm going to text Sean. I'm going to say, what are you throwing out there?
Well, listen,
What's this bull junk, as Coach Prime would say?
Just because he's hearing it doesn't mean that it's not bull junk or that it's not accurate.
Well, who's saying it?
Well, I mean, he's not going to relieve, rely on
No,
person,
no.
But I think just generally speaking, listen, I think they understand that he's a good player on the field, but he's also a pain in the ass. And, you know, there's guys around who you know are really good, I'm sure, on various teams, that their talent out, you know, like you said, the juice is worth the squeeze. So for now, I'm assuming that the juice is worth the squeeze with Micah Parsons, but at a certain point, it's not going to be. And where is that line of delineation where his off-the-field drama and nonsense outweighs his talent on the field?
But we got to be
careful. We're not
there
yet, but it's probably close.
Off-the-field drama and nonsense. It's just because the guy does his podcast and he says things about other players. Outside
well, we
of
no
issues with him.
Well, no, but we also don't know how he interacts with his teammates, how he interacts with the staff and the coaches. So it sounds like this has come from inside the organization.
Might
just be inside stuff that we just don't know, how he interacts with people, how he handles his business on a day-to-day basis.
Can I do some reckless speculation here?
No.
Well, I'm going to.
Anyway. Okay.
I wasn't really looking for you to approve that.
I mean, that was a rhetorical question, I guess.
Yeah, rhetorical question, Woodcock. I am going to say it was DeMarcus Lawrence. This is the person Sean Sharif is talking to. Here's why. There was something at the Super Bowl where DeMarcus was criticizing the Cowboys about. And Brandon Cooks, Stephon Gilmore, Micah Parsons, they all refuted that notion. I could see DeMarcus Lawrence, who's been there for a long time, Micah Parsons, who's still newer, but he's a stud, the two of them clashing a little bit. If that was my guess, because, like, I'm seriously, I'm going through the roster now. It's not Dak. It's not Zach Martin. On the defensive side of the ball, I don't think it's Trayvon Diggs. I don't think it's, like, a Deron Bland. This got to be a big enough name, knowing who Sean is, Sean Sharif, for him to put it out there. Because if it's just some third-string guy, it's like you roll your eyes and you say, who gives a crap? You know, tell the third-string guy to shut up because it's Micah Parsons.
Well, it also might not be a player. It could be a coach. It could be multiple staff members. It could be people
that's the case.
Within the front office and the organization. We don't know what it is. It could be, you know.
Well, Jerry Jones loves it because he adds into the drama. And if it's Mike McCarthy, then Mike McCarthy, you go waddle out of the building and get your ass fired.
You just never
because
know.
You need Micah Parsons. You don't have enough talent in Dallas right now, so you can't get rid of a player like that. Alrighty, we will take a break. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Phil Martelli joins us next. Let's send it back to our New York City headquarters. Here is Rich Ackerman with the latest CBS Sports Radio update.
He's back. Here's Zach Gelb.
Welcome back in inside the Phoenix Convention Center. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, getting you set for the Final Four. And now joining us, one of my favorites. I remember when I was a student at Temple University and getting to cover a few of those St. Joe's and Temple games. They're always fun. Is the longtime coach in Phil Martelli, kind enough to join us right now. Coach, always great to see you. How you been?
Great to see you. It was only fun when we had the better players against John Chaney and Dunf and all those guys. But Philadelphia basketball special, and you did a lot of great things while you were at Temple. So thank you for what you did for Philadelphia basketball.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that, and thanks so much. And it means a lot coming from you. Let me start you off with this Final Four, because, you know, it's great to see the growth of the women's game. And to see all the stars in the women's game this past year has been remarkable, from Paige to Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and Juju Watkins. We go on and on and on. But with the success of the women's game, people then talk about the men's game. They're like, we don't know where the state of men's basketball is at. And you still get to this Final Four. You have Zach Edey, who's a big star. DJ Burns has become a big star in this tournament. And we know what UConn obviously has been doing. How about the state of men's basketball right now?
Well, I thought you were going to start off with women's basketball because, as you well know, how many ever years ago, Gino Auriemma was the JV coach at Cardinal at Bishop Kenrick High School. I was the head high school coach. We've been friends for 50 years. And it is remarkable what they're doing. And I have the sneaking suspicion that at the end of the, when it's all done, that the Juju Watkins girl might be the best of all time after watching her as a freshman. But college basketball is in a, you know, a different stage. It's a transfer portal, NIL, and then you get to the tournament, and it should be, and hopefully it will be this weekend, just about basketball. Mm-hmm. It's not about who's taking what job. It's not about how much money so-and-so's making. It's about the players. And the guys that you featured have been just absolutely remarkable. And I think the power runs that have gone on, like Connecticut is powering through this tournament, but no less than Purdue is powering through the tournament. And really, NC State, I mean, how do you win 9 straight elimination games
and solve the legs
without being like just such a powerful, just a powerful force? And I think Alabama's embracing, and I'm not a big analytics guy, but they're embracing of offensive basketball. I am a big offensive guy. I think that, you know, like, they'll drum me out of the Coaches Association, which is meeting right downstairs here when I say this, but everybody is, defense wins championships. Yeah, but you know what? No championship in every sport has ever been won 2-0, maybe in hockey. But you have to score. And I think Nate Oates and the way that they have accepted and taken on this challenge of being an offensive juggernaut is just absolutely amazing. So you have unbelievable matchups. You have really terrific games. And you have personalities. Right, you have real personalities in these games. So college basketball is in a good place. We have to be careful, and all of us who are caretakers have to be careful of the sport, because of NIL, because of transfer portal, because of coaches moving around so quickly. Even today, there's reports that coaches are moving today, and we need to celebrate the game, and that's what I'm hoping for this weekend.
I want to circle back to what you said about Juju Watkins. Sensational, phenomenal, everything's right in front of her. But what do you see using your coaching cap when you watch her?
I think she's actually playing a game that's different than anybody else is playing. And I don't have, even though Gino and I have been lifelong friends, I have no connection on a Maya Moore. But Breanna Stewart was different, and Tarazi was different. And I watched them because of my connection with Gino. I just watched the game the other night against Connecticut, and her movement is different. Her understanding. And I think a lot of it is we often knock youth basketball. You know, it's not good, or youth sports aren't good. But if you can get a young lady that ready, and look at Reed Shepherd. If he can be that ready, everything's not wrong with youth sports. We have to make sure that we use it as a growth experience, not just as a player, but as a human being. And that young lady, you know what? You know what touched me the most, Zach, was when her walking off the floor and her having tears in her eyes. Because you think with all the accolades, you know, it could get team success. But not in that situation. I thought that was a beautiful moment.
So the last few years, Phil Martelli, you're with Michigan. I know things eventually have ended with Juwan Howard. How do you just look back at that experience? And at the end of the day, why didn't it work the way that people envisioned it?
Great question. First of all, for me, I got more than I gave. And I tried to give everything I had every single day. But to have been in the presence of Juwan Howard, an offensive mind, an NBA mind, coaching in college basketball, Howard Eisley as the offensive coordinator, just a brilliant guy, soft-spoken, Saadi Washington, both Howard Eisley and Saadi Washington will be head coaches. And to know that they had an impact on me as I kind of even grew in my knowledge after a long, long career. The biggest deal that I take away is I took away friendships. I took away relationships. Terrific players, great run early, and that ended up being a number of body blows that were hard to respond to as we went through things. We took a body blow when Hunter Dickinson transferred. We took a body blow when Juwan had serious heart surgery. Took a body blow when he came back. Navigating that because you don't have a plan, a playbook for that. We took a body blow with our point guard not fulfilling academic responsibility. So it was all body blow, and it played out on the court. It was not easy to sit through, but I do know this. I know that having been there and seeing the excellence that Michigan projects and what they expect, and the fact that Dusty May will get all the support, not that we didn't get support, he'll get support. And you win a national championship in football, then why not in basketball?
I know you as a coach, and then I also know you away from the court, and I've seen the work that you've done with Coaches Versus Cancer. I went to a sleepaway camp, and the athletic director still that day is the great Steve Chadwin, and I know you guys have honored him throughout the year, so that's meant a lot to me, and I've seen you speak at these events and how much you are dedicated, even when you were no longer the coach of St. Joe's, to continue to give back. But tell me what you're doing today, American Cancer Society, Coaches Versus Cancer.
Well, it is a drive. And I think that all coaches out there, I don't care if you're a grizzled veteran or a young coach, I think that your responsibility is to give back. Yes, we all have to recruit our teams. Yes, we all have to coach our teams. But the third thing that you can do is you can make somebody else's quality of life just a little bit better for a day because you give a talk or you present to a sponsor. So American Cancer Society, they all talk about knowledge and awareness and education about no. There's nobody out there listening, Zach, that doesn't realize cancer is evil. Cancer is a bully. And the only thing you can do is not beat it. You have to crush cancer. So any way, shape, or form that I can help, and on this platform of being a coach and people holding you at a certain level, it's important and it's demanded that we all give back. And that's my intention with Coaches Versus Cancer and the American Cancer Society. What I would like to do is drive all of them out of business. I want everybody involved with Coaches Versus Cancer. I want everybody involved with the American Cancer Society. I want them to be looking for work. Not that I wish that on anybody. Yeah. But we have to get to the point in this country that we are cancer free. And if I can do it with one statement to a great guy like you and your wide audience, then count me in. And all of us can help. Could be a dollar, could be an event, it could be a prayer, but we all have to get behind crushing cancer.
I know you got to run. Last thing I want to ask you, Coach Phil Martelli, I'm for NIL.
Yes, sir.
And we've Great. Seen coaches, right? They get up there in age and they can retire. But I think we all know why Coach K and Roy Williams and Nick Saban are no longer coaching. It annoys me. And I say this as part of CBS Sports Radio and CBS. It annoys me that Jay Wright isn't still on the sideline. And I think that's because of NIL right now, this new landscape in college basketball. Does it disappoint you that he's still not coaching?
No, it disappoints me a great deal. And saying that, the younger guys have to be ready. But it's our game. It's our game. It's our profession. It's our game, whether it's the NABC, whether it's the individual conferences. We have to recognize the young people involved in the game need to be taken care of. We are all responsible, NCAA included. Let's make sure that we have guardrails so we're not setting kids up for future failures. If you're 18 or 19 years old or 21 years old and you're making $100,000, and then basketball ends, and you don't go pro, and you want to go be a bank teller, is there any bank that's going to pay them $100,000 in their first year? We're setting these young people up unless we educate them. That's one. Two, they're also being pried on by agents taking percentages that are just completely absurd. Let's make sure that we have this good idea. Let's have this really good idea where the young people who run the game basically get taken care of. And we as coaches have to remember one thing. We're educators first. We're not coaches. That's a title. We're educators. How can we and how can our institutions help these young people in different and sometimes difficult times.
He's Coach Phil Martelli. Coach, always good to see you. Thanks so much.
Zach, I really appreciate you. Looking forward to some Phillies baseball this summer.
There he is, Phil Martelli, joining us on Radio Row. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio, live from the Phoenix Convention Center. And I know Coach Martelli, as passionate as he is about basketball, and he had a good chapter at Michigan after the departure from St. Joe's, where he was there forever. And you remember his great team with Jameer Nelson. I always used to joke with Coach Martelli, that's why he brings up the Phillies line at the end, that I think he's more passionate about Phillies baseball than he actually is with coaching college basketball. And we know the really passion that one coach, Phil Martelli, and the excitement Phil Martelli does have for the game of college basketball. And I hope he could continue to find a way to be coaching somewhere once again real soon. So it's a very compelling dynamic that we do have here in Phoenix, because the men's tournament forever, right? It's talked about. And you have the storylines that are created when you take a glance and you look at, obviously, with Purdue going up against NC State. And I think that's going to be the closer game with the matchup of DJ Burns and then also Zach Edey. And on the other side, you have Alabama and UConn. And I think we'll know early. I think in the first 10 minutes, Alabama comes out and they're firing from three. They're clicking on all cylinders. They're hitting their shots. Then I think that's going to be a game. But you always have that thought in the back of your cabeza, well, no one's really been able to give UConn a game. And that's why I keep on saying this to everyone we bring on, just to see their opinions, because we're all raving about UConn. Like, oh my God, the UConn Huskies. They are phenomenal. But the crazy part is, they haven't played a good game yet. They haven't played their best game yet. And that shows how dominant they are, that they're still beating everyone by 10-plus points. And they're still beating the snot out of each and every team. So that's the thing to me with UConn. And that's the great unknown with UConn. When can they get their better gear? And they don't even need their better gear. Because still, even when they haven't been playing at their best, like that Northwestern game that they played, they didn't shoot the ball well. They still kicked their ass by 30 points. It was wild. And that's what's so crazy about UConn. Everyone knows they are the team to beat. Everyone knows UConn is the preeminent team in this tournament, and still, they haven't even played their best game. And that shows you why they are a great team, because great teams find a way to play their to win when they don't play their best. And still, UConn not playing at their best still kicks the crap out of everyone in this tournament. But I have an admission, and I've said this before. As much as I can't wait to watch these games tomorrow, you look at the women's side, South Carolina, the undefeated run, now going up against NC State. But as big of an excitement there was for Iowa LSU, I don't want to say I'm more excited, but I'm just as equally as excited to see the matchup tonight between Caitlin Clark and then Paige Beckers as well. More from the Final Four next.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.